fade in on the ends of two electric wires as a spark jumps between them. Cut among various shots of pontoon planes, hands tinkering with materials, and exploding buildings.
MacGruber! Making life-saving inventions out of household materials.
MacGruber!
Getting in and out of ultra-sticky situations. MacGruber! He has a black employee now. MacGruber!
Okay. I don't remember one of those. I didn't just see one of those lines happen. Yeah, sorry. You threw me because one of those lines was new. Cut to MacGruber telling a private joke to Vicky as Daryl walks up against
footage. Like he's on the wrong one.
You're on the wrong one. There's three of them.
I'm literally on the top one. Which one are we on?
One.
I sent them in order.
God damn it.
Just keep it going.
Your fault.
Just keep it going.
Flames.
MacGruber, this door is magnet shut. We're trapped.
Vicky, someone cue Vicky.
I'm looking for the fucking script. It's not in Discord. I don't use Facebook.
No, they're in Facebook. Oh, fuck.
I don't use Facebook.
Oh, I sent all three of them there. It says you seen two of them.
I did, because I pulled it up on something else.
Oh, hang on. All right, hang on. We're going to start this shit.
We'll start it again.
No, we're not. We're going to keep going.
No, we're starting it over.
Cut to MacGruber and Daryl in a karate pose against footage of flames.
All right, that works. Then you got to.
Trying to send him to Discord so he has them.
Cut to a chemical weapons steamer. Superimposed caption: chemical weapons steamer. Cut to sign marked steamer control room as sirens wail.
MacGruber, this door is magnet shut. We're trapped.
That's not our only option, MacGruber. From the looks of that nitrogen bomb, we've only got 20 seconds.
Don't worry, Vicky. Chill, Darrell. We'll have plenty of time to relax and to chill, Darrell, once we get out of here. Once we scram, Darrell.
It's pronounced Daryl.
Oh, like a white Daryl.
10 seconds, MacGruber.
Vicky, hand me that Allen wrench.
You've got it, MacGruber.
Okay, Darrell.
Daryl.
Funk me over that copper wire. Out of sight?
It's Daryl.
Okay, Vicky, hand me that stir stick.
On my way, MacGruber.
Darrell.
It's Daryl.
Jab me over that fly shoelace. You dig?
MacGruber, I don't know if this is working out.
That reminds me of a good joke. What do you get when you cross a Mexican with a black?
MacGruber.
Excuse me. A black African-American. Mo' better?
Yeah, mo' better.
Okay, if you cross a Mexican with a black African-American and a Jew and a woman, what do you get? I don't know, but I sure don't want that person to move in next door to... And it explodes.
As it should.
Now I gotta go over to part two.
No.
Okay, their part two or the one in the video? Like, is it the one with him in the outfit? Or
It's part three. Part three is part two. So go to part three.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. So go to three. Okay.
All right. Kaz, when you're ready.
All right.
Wait, hold on. What? MacGruber two?
Three. Go nope, three.
Three.
God damn it.
And then we'll go to two.
It's the transcripts. Their fault.
This is confusing. Yeah. This is your fault.
I know.
Fade in. It's the same. On the ends. Wait, okay. What?
It's the same. No, yeah, go ahead. You're
fine. It's fine.
What? Words.
Go ahead.
Fade in on the ends of two electrical wires as a spark jumps between them. Cut among various shots of pontoon planes, hands tinkering with materials and exploding buildings.
MacGruber! He took a couple months off and did a lot of soul searching. MacGruber! He spent some time in Africa and learned about their culture. MacGruber! He's Facebook friends with Spike Lee. MacGruber!
Trying to find the point in it.
Cut.
To MacGyver? Why is it even cut. Using the right word? To MacGruber signing Spike. Wait, no, it's actually fuck it, I don't care.
What?
MacGruber, this door won't budge.
Cut to Heroin Czar's headquarters.
There it is.
He got superimposed it. Caption, Heroin Czar headquarters. Cut to sign marked Heroin Czar control room as sirens wail.
MacGruber, this door won't budge.
There's more, MacGruber. That ticking bomb is set to blow in 20 seconds. It's MacGruber dressed in an African dashiki.
I think that's very important. Okay, look, before we start here, I've got something I want to say. The road towards enlightenment takes many turns. Fortunately, mine took me straight to you, Darrell.
That's Daryl.
And it is with great pleasure that I announce that in 2 Mondays, for the first time ever, we'll be taking the day off to celebrate the life of a man I consider to be my personal hero, Dr. Martin Rufus King.
As Luther.
No, right, Luther. You're Rufus.
I'm Daryl.
Whatever, look.
15 seconds.
I know I have a ways to go, Darrell, but I'm heading the right direction. So put her there.
MacGruber extends his hand. Daryl looks on, unsure. Vicky smiles. Unfortunately, Daryl goes for it.
Ah, he's got a gun!
MacGruber zaps Daryl and Mace once again. Cut to a Heroin Czar headquarters exploding and spewing smoke everywhere.
MacGruber! Real quick, I need to point out the fact that it says, what was it? MacGruber zaps Daryl with Mace once again. None of that makes any sense.
With that,
it's like pepper spray.
It's pepper, exactly. Yeah, I did my best.
All right, last one. One more. Number two.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Why are we doing this out of order? Okay.
It's not our fault.
Fade in on the ends of two electric wires as a spark jumps between them. Cut among various shots of pontoon planes, hands tinkering with materials, and exploding buildings.
MacGruber! His harmless little joke really got him into trouble, MacGruber! He had to take some fucking class because of stupid corporate bullshit, MacGruber! He makes his jokes in private now, MacGruber!
Cut to MacGruber telling a private joke to Vicky as Daryl walks up against footage of flames.
Let's skip the MacGruber part.
Wait, that was the last MacGruber.
Yeah, they put that on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it not two?
No, it is. It's fine. It's just, go ahead. Yeah, you're good. Okay. Go to cut.
Cut to insurgent cave system. Superimposed caption, insurgent cave system. Cut to sign marked cave control room as sirens wail. Struggling MacGruber, to lock.
This door is welded shut.
That's not all, MacGruber. By the looks of the chemical bomb, we've got exactly 20 seconds.
Okay, don't worry, gang. And when I say gang, I'm not insinuating that anyone here is a Blood or a Crip or any other black gang or white gang. Whites can have gangs too, right, Darrell?
It's Daryl.
Show enough. But look, if there's one thing I've learned from the sensitivity training classes that I was forced to go to, it's that regardless of the color of our skins, we can all work together.
10 seconds, MacGruber. Sorry.
Vicky, hand me that screw.
You got it, MacGruber.
Okay, Darrell, respectfully, hand me that pen.
Which pen?
That one, right there.
There's pins.
There are three pins.
There are three pins. Yellow, red, and black. And red. I can't tell which one you're pointing at. Be more specific.
That one. The African-American pin.
What?
I'm sorry. The Negro pin? Negro-American pin?
Just called it a black pin.
Oh, so now it's fly and rap to call it a black pin. But earlier it was square.
Here, just take the pin.
Ah, he's got a gun! I zapped him with Mace again.
MacGruber.
What? He charged me. He's obviously on PCP. I mean, look at his eyes. They're all bloodshot.
You maced him.
You are such a racist.
I am not a racist.
3 seconds, MacGruber.
Okay. Vicky, hand me that Chinese pin. The Asian pin. The yellow pin. I'm a racist.
Cut to the cave exploding and spewing smoke everywhere.
MacGruber!
Well, we're never doing that again.
It's not our fault. It's not our fault. It was, oh shit, it was their fault. It was their fault for messing up the thing.
That's true.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's Saturday, and you know what that means.
It's not.
Oh, it's not. That's right. We do this on Friday. It's horse time here on Podzilla 1985, on maybe our last show at this point.
Doesn't matter.
My name is Shannon Young. I'm gonna be your host tonight. With me, of course, we got the horse time boys. Down below me on the video, we've got Double H.
Oh, you are such a racist.
To his right, we got the Kaz man.
Yep.
And above him, chilling on the casting couch, Tanner Calvert.
Just chill, Tanner.
Tanner.
Just chill.
Well,
fade in on the ends of two electrical wires as sparks jump between them. Cut among various shots of pantoon planes.
Stop!
Hands with materials stop and exploding buildings.
Stop saying pantoon!
Pantoon every time. And all I can think of is shampoo.
I just imagine the pontoon boat going like, it's pontoon, MacGruber.
Just say pontoon, man.
Oh, man. All right.
I wish he was here to say that.
All right, kids. We're gonna joke around for about 20 minutes. It's gonna seem like a short show, but hey, stay tuned. We got a musical number in between, and then I said this before the show. After the show, we're gonna put in our long and he'll be back.
Why'd he leave?
He'll be back. It's a Parker problem. We're gonna have a long discussion about journalism today, biases in journalism, polarization. It's a whole big discussion about journalism that I had with Kaz and Hunter before the show that was so good. And it was the pre-show, but we want to include it. So we're putting it at the end of the show.
Hold on. I'm wondering if I maybe have lost the bet, because I bet that we would see a vertical video of Tanner by the end, but it's actually horizontal.
It's horizontal, but I don't understand why he's doing this.
I don't either. He looks like he's about to sell me some like cologne.
He looks like he's about to ask me to take it off and bend over just to make sure that I'm going to be right for this film.
60% of the time, it works 100% of the time.
And he's wearing a tuna fish hat.
It is a tuna. Look at it. It's got a bat. It's a personified tuna.
He also isn't saying anything. It's
of real panther, so you know it's good.
It is good.
I don't know what's happening.
I don't think Tanner knows what's happening. He just kind of appeared, and he hasn't said anything.
Pantoon planes.
Oh, he's almost said something. What's that, Tanner?
He almost said something. I'm not going to let him say anything more.
We actually
not
just
muted. Yeah, his audio's just not there.
Yeah, we just can't hear you, Tanner.
Yeah, we couldn't hear that either.
All right, so we don't have a lot of time, so let's just finish off the show by talking about the one topic that someone asked us about, the Ghostbusters trailer. We kind of talked about it a little bit on Tuesday. Unfortunately, we haven't posted the Tuesday show yet, so here we go. Tanner, are you going to be...
I like how your pause like implicated that we talked about it on Tuesday, unfortunately.
No, that's more of we did the show Tuesday, unfortunately, because... Cody did not have a good time with that one, I don't think.
Oh,
he had some internet issues. Like Hunter had some mic issues.
No, Cody had some cast.
Yes, that's what I was told.
Cody had some cast issues.
Hunt.
You try that again?
It wasn't entirely like that. It was more like a. It's hard to describe. I'm curious though. I'm legitimately curious.
You gotta watch the show to learn.
Did you do anything with the mic, or did it just literally just fix itself? That's so weird.
I'm not doing anything different right now than I was then. The only thing that might have been going on then is that my internet was a little more taxed on Tuesday, but that was it. So
yeah, Tuesday was a strange episode. Michaela, to answer your question, is Tanner going to be at CCW tomorrow? Probably not. The question is, am I going to be at CCW tomorrow? And the answer is
probably
yes.
Not.
No, I'm going to be.
No, yeah. No, he won't. He's lying to
you. It's my last show. Anyway, the Ghostbusters trailer. So we did watch it. At least I know Hunter and I did. Kaz, did you watch the Ghostbusters trailer?
God, yes.
Well, I know Cody watched it because he's trying to fit in.
I can't tell what his reaction is based on that.
Did you not like it?
Fuck yeah, I did. Okay. What are y'all talking about?
Very good. Very good.
I'm just pulling up the video because I'm willing to show this thing again to our legion of fans.
That'll get us flagged. We should not do that. That's a bad idea.
Fuck these days.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, seriously, I'm seriously thinking that at some point we're going to stop doing these live videos because I'm tired of getting in trouble with Facebook. And it's getting to the point where I just don't think it's worth the trouble. I what the fuck is that? Oh, okay.
Red ceiling. Oh, look at him.
It was look up at him. And then down and then up.
What's up, Dilbert?
Just leave it that angle. It's fine.
It's all right. Show us the ceiling.
But yeah, so in case you weren't around for Tuesday, the podcast has really lost its way in a lot of ways. And we're going to try to rope it in and rein it in. Part of that, I think, is we're going to probably do away with the live shows, except for like tabletop, because it helps to see visually the game.
I disagree.
You don't think it helps to see the game?
No, we should have live shows, but not just the game.
Maybe. All right. So whenever I get my studio set back up, I'll want to do more live shows probably, but like I'm miserable.
I know
right
you
now.
Will.
I
hate, yeah, because you don't have the technology to do it.
I hate doing this. I hate doing the laptop. I hate everything about this. I would much prefer just to be doing audio right now, but here we are. We're going to get rid of Podbean. We're no longer going to use Podbean as a service. We're going to pay for it for a month or two extra just so we can archive the previous shows, but we are going to switch over to a new service that is better. We've been with Podbean for 6 years now, and in those 6 years, it's been nothing but trouble. They keep taking away stuff from our tools. We used to be able to check our listens on Spotify and iTunes and stuff like that. We no longer can do that. Now we can't even change the background color on the site. So it's a lovely white with slightly pink letters. It's absolutely atrocious and it's embarrassing.
It's a lovely Caucasian.
Yes.
European.
Tanner, I think you need to
jab me on that fly shoelace, Tanner.
Tanner, I think you need to jump on a pontoon boat and get the fuck out of here.
So I was having so much fun with it last night. I gotta confess something. While you guys couldn't hear me last night on Reddit, I could hear you after a certain point.
What?
Stand by my word. The hilarity that ensued.
No. The hell you say.
What hilarity? Remind me.
I go to help the guy. And then he decides to throw a stick of dynamite after blowing the dude's body apart. And that dynamite got me.
Yeah, we were aware. We're aware.
Yeah. You guys are just like walking away talking.
That's another thing.
This is what it's like playing Red Dead with Tanner.
This fucking podcast was never meant to be a co-op game on Xbox where you could just drop in, drop out as you please. We used to have set casts, set schedules, and now it's the goddamn wild, wild west over here. We need a little structure. I'm getting old because I believe in structure, and I think that
I'm going to be real with you. If you go back to not doing it this way, I won't be here. So
well, no, I'm talking about damn kids. I'm talking about just doing it as an audio specific. No one just jumps into the audio and like starts, you know, because Tanner knows that everything that we do on here is automatic. He doesn't have to set up any recording. Nobody has to do anything but me. I'm the one that takes care of all of it. But if Tanner had to actually like record himself, save it, and send it to me and edit and shit, I think he wouldn't just pop in and out like fucking Lego Star Wars. But maybe I'm wrong.
You're right, but also why not leave it this way? Because I mean, that's awesome. If someone's going to be late jumping in the show, there's no extra editing together that you have to do. You just jump in.
It's fine. I'm not. I don't
want
to.
I'm just saying this is less.
You just kind of made his point for him, though, because his point is he doesn't want people just dropping in and out. It's a set show. Like here's who's gonna be here. Here's what time we're gonna start. And there
it depends on the show.
Friday has never been that show since we started doing this.
Yeah, Friday I don't care about. Friday is very much. There's no content here anyway. If you want content, stay for after the show when we discuss journalism. This is just the setup for that show. This is just the bullshit.
Now, like Tuesdays, Mondays, Wednesdays, no one really just jumps in.
Michaela watched it, and when she saw Paul Rudd was in it, she was like, dang, he's in here. And then I was like, I'm going to watch it anyway. Yeah, you're going to watch it, because Paul Rudd's great.
What?
I don't know what your problem is with
Paul Rudd. Why do you consistently have the worst takes? Paul Rudd is a treasure.
Are
you kidding me?
He's a national treasure. His Conan
appearances.
I'm
going to watch it anyway. Well,
Paul Rudd does not age.
What does that mean?
Paul Rudd does not age. He's, what is he, 50?
He's like 183. Man. Technically, Paul Rudd was around during the Civil War.
Paul Rudd was one of the journalists during World War I.
Yes, truly.
He's 52.
152.
Is he really 52?
And he's an Aries, apparently. Yeah, no, he really is. He's 52. Yeah.
Even that
taller than I thought. I guess because like you see him up against all the Marvel guys regularly, and those guys are like all over 6 feet.
Oh,
he's 5'10".
Speaking of the Marvel guys,
compared to them, he looks not that tall.
Jesse probably won't touch this with a 10-foot pole because Jesse and I discussed this because I asked him like, "Are you going to cover the Activision Blizzard thing on Nerd Up?" And he was like, "No, we just cover video game news and stuff." I'm like, "That is video game news." And he said, "Yeah, but he wants to keep it pleasant. He wants to keep it a happy show." And I get that. That's fine. I got no problem with him wanting to do that. But I don't think he'll touch this story either. And you guys saw
that. Do we want to?
I want to touch
it. Let's do it.
Well, not that.
But Blizzard.
Well, yes, but not that. What I was going to mention was the fact that Scarlett Johansson has sued Disney over Black Widow. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your take on that. I don't have any
dog in that fight. That shit play out how it plays out.
Well, I think what's...
Go
ahead, Tanner.
Go ahead. I would just say it's opened up a can of worms now. You're seeing everybody doing this now.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was gonna say. Like, I also don't have a dog in the fight, obviously.
We should lay out the
I was gonna
facts.
Say the so reason why
what I know.
It. Yeah,
yeah. Here's what I know, and you correct me if there's some information I'm wrong on, or you have more than I do. So, when Scarlett Johansson signed on to make Black Widow, contractually, the situation was it would be a theatrical release only. And that her pay would be based on a portion of the box office take, right?
Well,
COVID happens.
They never, I don't think they ever actually agreed that it would be theatrical only. She was afraid.
No, they did.
Oh, it was in the contract. No,
that was in the contract.
That's why
there was a subtext,
contract
though.
That are key to the story. And it was a theatrical release only. Okay. What's that?
That would address it at the time of, like, I think if I'm not mistaken, there is a legalese situation where in the contract that they would be readdressing it at the time of, like, whether or not it would be theatrical or not, and they would give her the option to be able to change the contract. I don't know the specifics of it, but
yeah, because there's got
to
be
that's new to me.
Well, there's got
to
be
my
something.
Understanding was it's theatrical only. I mean, this was sort of Disney's take on it. The contract was it was theatrical only, and that she would get her pay based on a portion of the box office. When they chose to release it same day in theaters and on Disney Plus, the lead up to that, when that announcement was made, because that was several months before it actually came out that way, she began trying to negotiate with them on, okay, if we're going to do it this way, that's great, but part of my pay then needs to be based on the Disney Plus take as well, like the same amount as you would theatrically, because it's the same style release. They did not get back to her. They chose to ignore those messages and attempts to negotiate, so that when it came out that way, they could reasonably say, this is what the contract was. We are not going to pay you anything from the Disney Plus take.
Well, see, okay, here's
so she chose to sue them because they breached her contract.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, is there has to be something, because there's no way that Disney's not stupid. There's no way Disney put in a contract, we will only release this theatrically, and then just decided to change their mind about it. Like, there has to be something.
I think there is, because I would assume that is a boilerplate contract for theatrical releases up until COVID happened, because again, this is the important part. Their response to her lawsuit was basically to say, it's gross and disgusting of you to use COVID as a way to make money.
Right.
And she's like, that's not what's happening here at all.
Right.
You ignored an attempt to renegotiate. You chose to take advantage of the pandemic by releasing at home, which again was the right move. And she has said more than once, if I understand correctly, I'm not mad at all that they released on Disney Plus. I'm mad that there was no renegotiation of the fees, of a reasonable pay of
that's
fees.
The part I'm talking about, where there was supposed to have been, like, from my understanding, there was something that was supposed to have been in there to give her that option to come to them and be like, hey, if you're going to do this, let's renegotiate. And then that didn't happen, or something to that effect.
Okay. I just want to mention that, like, we keep talking about the contract said it would be theatrical only. A contract, it's like Lionel Hutz. What is a contract? A contract is, legally binding. There should have been no need for renegotiations. If they had a contract that said it will only be released theatrically, and they were going to release it on Disney Plus against the contract, Scarlett Johansson would have never renegotiated. She would have sued them automatically, because that is a breach of... There's no getting around that. There's no story.
Right. Which is basically what happened, because...
That's exactly
the
it.
Moment
exactly.
that they chose to release it anywhere else, that was breaching her contract.
The renegotiation should have been for the fact that, hey, we're changing the contract up because of COVID. We're going to release it on Disney Plus,
And you get those revenue.
And you get
percentage of that revenue.
What
she did, she did not get Disney Plus revenue. She only got, from my understanding, only got and she should have gotten Disney Plus.
And this is the point I was making. This is the point I was going to make earlier when Cass says he doesn't have a dog in the fight, and I agreed with him. Except, and like Tanner said, the can of worms, because this is a major company who thinks that they are invincible, they're Disney, they can do whatever they want. Literally, if this is true, it's literally changing the law as they see fit or breaking contracts as they see fit to make more money. And I hope she sues them, and I hope she gets everything she's owed, and I hope she puts a fucking dent in them. I know she won't, because it's still Disney.
The ripple effect, the ripple effect from this is going to be bad too, because the latest news is that Kevin Feige is fucking furious.
Really?
Any of this is happening. Kevin Feige, the guy who was making Disney billions of dollars and completely handling the MCU on his own, and that is no small feat, because it's not like he's directing all these movies. He's keeping everything, all the gears, you know, well-oiled and moving properly, is now going to them going, you're going to piss off everybody in this whole thing, and everybody who's going to come into it. So all the current actors are going to go, well, I'm not going to sign up for anything more if this is how they're going to treat their people. Yeah. And all these high profile actors they keep bringing in, that's going to stop, because aren't going to sign up to work with them if this is how they're going to potentially be treated.
Right.
Well, you're already seeing a ripple effect taking place, because Emma Stone is weighing her options on possibly suing them for really
Cruella.
Yep. On Disney Plus.
I didn't see that, but that makes sense.
It happened today too. And it's going to be another, you could exponential that tomorrow. And I am, I'm just going to say, like, I can't speak to that. Like, I'm not even going to even say that I understand the intricacies of what makes those legitimate or not legitimate.
Well, it's pretty shitty if they have a contract that says they're going to get paid this much based on box office performance, and then they take it out of the box office, because you have to be a fool to think that Disney Plus is not cutting into that revenue. It's cutting into that revenue heavily.
Of the revenue from the opening weekend or the opening day, I forget which one, of that movie, almost half of it came from Disney Plus.
Right.
It made $80 million at the box office. It made $60 million through Disney Plus.
And we're seeing
that is not an insubstantial number.
And you know, with Disney, the shitty thing with Disney, or the smart thing up until this point, I guess, is the fact that there's a lot of movie networks that are doing this, but they're doing it for free. HBO Max releases all of those Warner Brothers films for free same day. Mortal Kombat, Godzilla versus King Kong.
Right.
Disney is the only one
still have to pay for Disney Plus, but of course Disney is simultaneously charging a streaming fee,
extra
$30 a monthly fee, and then an additional.
Right.
There's the difference right there. That's
right.
A major revenue difference.
So I wonder these other studios that, like, the people that made Mortal Kombat, or even not Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat is a big movie, but let's, you know, like the big films, like Suicide Squad that's coming out.
Suicide Squad comes out next Friday.
And it comes out day one on HBO Max, and I wonder, you know, they're not even making the extra $30 a pop from people like Disney is. So the pandemic has changed the way movies work in general, and I wonder if and when we're ever going to go back to the way things were, because if they're making extra money,
we won't,
because they're skipping the payments they're making out to these theaters, and they're pocketing all this money extra. Theaters are pissed. They were, remember, just last year, not too long ago, they were in danger of going out of business completely because of the pandemic.
Oh, AMC said outright they weren't going to show anymore. Was it Universal? Somebody.
Yeah.
They were like, we're done showing your movies because of this. And they went, cool.
So?
Sorry.
Yeah. Right.
Really don't care.
Look, I'm going to be a fucking, I can be called a dickhead over this, but that's just the reality of the change of the fucking times.
Yeah.
Like, I get where the theaters are coming from and so forth, but you're a fucking horse and buggy situation that's bitching about a car coming into play. Streaming
theaters have been on the chopping block for a long time now.
Yeah.
This is the first thing to realistically put them. And here's the thing. Theaters are never going to completely go away
because you were
talking about the human condition earlier. We love retro shit. Yeah, we love old stuff.
Me and my wife are looking at going to a car, like a drive-in thing.
The drive-in.
It's fucking awesome.
It's not mainstream. Tanner's talking renting out an entire theater to watch Ghostbusters.
Exactly, but this is not mainstream.
That was the plan.
It's happening.
That was a group plan, yeah.
That's not the streaming service's fault. That is the theater's fault for fucking up and Kodaking themselves into the future.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it's... Okay, here's the real shame of it on a local scale. So, Marcus Theaters, back when it was still Werenberg Theaters, the one in Cape, we gave up going there. I forget exactly what happened, but it was one of many times we went there and had a poor experience, annoying people around us, uncomfortable seats, everything's too expensive. It just wasn't worth it. And so we started going to, there was a place in St. Louis, which of course we're significantly closer to St. Louis than you guys overall. I mean, it's less of a trip for us. No. So when there were major releases we wanted to see in the theater, there was a place in St. Louis that was, I think it was an AMC at the time, but they also got bought out by Marcus. And they had a thing called, as I like to tell Ace often, the Five-Star Lounge. And it was a 21 and up plus theater. It had like nice leather reclining seats that were heated, table service food, because the seats were far enough apart that like when a waiter came in, it was not a, you know, somebody came in to wait your table, they weren't really in the way of other people. They served alcohol there. Marcus bought out Werenberg and went, okay, why are all the theaters not that way? Mm-hmm. We'll serve alcohol there. We'll have much nicer seating. Yes, it's less seating per theater. There are significantly fewer seats, but if we can get people to come in and sell all of those seats, it won't be as big a deal. They did an incredible job renovating that theater, and they addressed all of my major complaints about it. You have reserved seating, which you can buy in advance, so I know exactly where I'm going to be. I don't have to go sit and try to hold a seat. The seats are significantly more comfortable. Everything is significantly cleaner. The food that they put in is actually really good. Sarah likes their pizza over some like chain restaurant pizza places. Like, we will go there and literally eat during the movie just because the food is that good.
And the food is actually inexpensive compared to most theaters. Real expensive, it's affordable.
But I mean, if you're going to go out there and eat like, you know, table service, it's not any more than you're going to eat at most like regular restaurants in that area. Like Buffalo Wild Wings, you're going to spend the same amount there as you would there, but you can do it during the theater. They addressed all those complaints, and then COVID hit and everything just kind of went to crap all over again. And as soon as they gave you an option to watch those movies at home, now I'm weighing watching it at home the same day. Of course, granted, you can always do that, but now we're talking like literally the same day. I can watch that movie at home. I can pause it when I want to. I can eat literally whatever I want. I can go to the bathroom whenever I need to.
You don't have to pay to open the refrigerator.
That's all right.
I don't have to deal with other people.
That's all true. And I was going to say the one thing that they could never address is the people, because no matter how nice you make a theater, but at the same time, some of my best memories are in theaters. And I'm one of those people that I will go to theaters.
But nostalgia don't pay the bills, Chief.
No, it
doesn't.
That's
the problem.
No,
that's the problem.
Some of my favorite memories were going down to CD Warehouse and buying fucking music CDs.
That's not true.
We were walking through the mall yesterday, and I remembered that, was it a CD Warehouse that we had that was under, it was directly across from where Hot Topic is now in the mall. There was a CD place in there for a while.
Oh,
right near the, on that wing.
Yeah.
Like Fire.
No, FYE was on the other end. FYE was down there on the other end.
But yeah, their point still stands.
But yeah, I mean, those kind of places. Kaz, yeah, I love that stuff.
That shit changes.
Kaz, I'm curious. It just changes. Do you feel the same way about Amazon taking jobs from, and the future of robotics taking away people's jobs in the same way? That is, this is the way of the future. Deal with it. Sorry for you.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. By no means, way, shape, or form. But what we've discovered in the times of the pandemic is actually a major like crescendo of this is people. What we're learning is we're moving from a extrovert world to an introvert world.
Yeah,
there's always going to be a situation where people are going to be displaced from positions that used to exist to ones that no longer do, because of the way that things progress. I mean, there's just no getting around that.
Right.
Sometimes it's more unfortunate than others. You know, I also would love to see movie theaters stick around and here's the trick. Continue to address the problems that they did before. How do you deal with the people? I don't know. Maybe you said that there's no way you can do that. Alamo Drafthouse would disagree. And there was going to be an Alamo Drafthouse in St. Louis. They are a notorious chain for actively going after people who were annoying in the movies and embarrassing them so much that they don't come back. They keep a ban list of people who are not allowed. You show an ID when you come into that place. There are ways to address it. But at the same time, it's still ineffective in that I got to get in my car and I got to go there versus I can pull it up on my TV.
And before you go into that, I just want to make a point here. Like what I said a while ago is like, as far as like we're moving as a type of world that we are in, like we have spent the last 20, 30 years in a very extrovert world where like all marketing and all PR and all of this stuff is leaning toward people who want to be with other people and offices that we are all in the same office and we're getting around the water, the watering hole. And that's where ideas come from and so forth. And this, and that you have to have a 9-to-5 in the office. Like that's like, that was that world. And now we are in the new world. And this is where we are now, is we're going into an introvert world where people work from home. And not all people, but a vast amount of people. And whenever the movies are now in home, where you're not going out and watching movies with strangers and all around you, not saying that's bad, but you're coming home and you're bringing friends together and you're all watching it in your homes. And it's just a change of dynamic, and it's different, and people are going to have problems with it, but it's just an epoch. It's a change of epoch.
Tanner, so, go ahead, and then we got to wrap it up.
So this is...
I can't tell if he did it on purpose or if his internet's just fucking up. Hunter, you're muted.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, so, yeah, I am. I thought I kicked that off.
So anyway, in my opinion, this whole same-day release thing is going to come to an end, to the point that the movie companies are going to stop it, whether they own the streaming service or not. Shannon, think of one movie that you went to the theaters to see more than once.
Okay.
All right, what was it?
There's a couple. Punisher, Wild Wild West... so when I first started dating the ex, I had to watch every new movie twice, because I'd go see it once with her and then I'd see it with Lindsay a couple days later. So there were quite a few films that I did that with.
Okay, so think about that. All right, I bought Black Widow here at the house. I've watched that movie 6 times since I paid for it one time, $30. Everybody in my household has watched it more than once. Now, if I wanted to see that more than once and it was in theaters, and I would have had to pay that $20 each time I went to watch it. Regardless of what's happening, the movie companies are losing money because of this.
Well, hold on. Let me just throw something out real quick. Yeah, hold on.
They may be leaving money on the table, but they're not necessarily losing money. Not to mention, right, it is a very small subset of people who go see movies multiple times.
Take a page.
I think it's a lot smaller than you.
Yeah, very few people do that.
Take a page from Xbox. When Game Pass was announced, everyone said, that's insane. You're going to lose a ton of money by putting these brand new games on Game Pass. You're talking about $60 titles. Halo, of Gears of War. Every AAA title that Microsoft makes, they put on Game Pass day one. And all you have to do is pay the, $10 subscription fee per month?
They made fucking bank.
They've made so much money because so many people are subscribed to that service.
That's just gaming. Yeah. That's just gaming. Subscription service in general. Adobe, as far as Photoshop is concerned, they used to sell this shit. I remember when it was $1,500 for a fucking iteration of Photoshop. But now it's $10 a month or whatever. They made bank.
But now I want to say, though, that I don't entirely disagree with Tanner, because I think that it might not stay this way forever. We may go back into theaters, but not because they're going to lose money. I think it's more in the sense of promotion, marketing, the deals they strike with these theaters.
Why wouldn't you give them free when you make sure that you get subscribers who will get at least 3 more months that will make up for that money lost?
If anything, nightmare scenario here is that you get more of what we're getting with Paramount's streaming service. Now, suddenly, Warner Brothers will have a streaming service, and Universal, and Columbia. Yep. And
the AMC theaters are just being bypassed. That's all it is. Yeah.
And now suddenly you have to pay for all those streaming services to get access to all of those movies.
It was like
either you want to see them or not.
Yeah, it was
what happened with cable. Exactly. And then it all came together again.
Yeah, there was a time when
it's Mall Bell that got broke up, and then it all came together again.
You could pay for cable per month, but then they came out with all the different, one service here, one service there, and you have to pay for separately. But now you have to pay for so many different services just to equal up to what you would have gotten for the cable package. And in a lot of places, it's actually more expensive. Okay, we got to cut it off there, though, because...
Hold on. Before we do that, how many services do you have? Netflix?
I have Netflix, Disney, Hulu, Shudder. There's more. I have probably six or seven different ones.
Okay. Tanner, how ballpark are you?
Netflix, Hulu, Disney, HBO.
HBO.
Peacock.
Peacock, yeah.
So you got at least five.
Shudder. I've got six.
Hunter, are you in the same ballpark? Yeah, me. I'm in the same
Netflix,
ballpark.
Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and HBO, and then we Amazon use my mother-in-law's Disney. Yep. So, because basically we trade our Disney with her Hulu. So,
I'm in the same ballpark. I'm in the same ballpark as everybody else. We have an average of 5 to 7 right here, somewhere in that ballpark. And if you extrapolate that, that's practically a cable account, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But of course, we can't discount the fact that there are significant advantages to using the streaming services. Lord, cable.
On demand.
You can watch whatever you want, whenever you want to.
But that's technology.
Most
that's
of the time, no commercials, depending on what you're paying for.
Which I do want to mention. I do want to mention really quick.
Commercials.
DirecTV, I know for a fact, had it. And I think Charter did too, Spectrum. Had where when you subscribe to their subscription, you know, their actual cable packages, you could still do on demand. You could still do the same things that those different channels are doing now. They just did it as a giant package. But again, it's so much more profitable for these different companies to create their own, and people keep buying them. But at some point, there's got to be a tipping point where people are going to get sick of it. Or they won't.
Well, you're going to start losing certain... It's what Kaz was talking about earlier. The singularity will come back together. You're going to start losing services, which are then going to be bought up by other services. So they'll bump their price up a little bit. And the next thing you know, you've got three big services and they all cost about $50 a month. And it's cable and satellite all over again.
And that's
every time.
That's where we're going to leave it here for tonight. All right. So what the hell happened? We went from MacGruber. We went from this journalist talk to MacGruber. To this in
depth wait till you hear the shit that's coming after this.
Oh, we didn't talk about the Ghostbusters trailer.
It was good. It was good.
It was very good, and I'm very excited.
It's fantastic.
For it.
It's
right there. Hashtag heart thumpy. Yeah.
All right, so
I'm thrilled.
We're gonna cut it off here for the main show. Stay tuned after this musical interlude. We're gonna have the discussion between myself, Kaz, and Hunter about journalism that we had before the show. That was great. And since we don't have a goodbye message at the end of that, we'll say it right now. I want to thank you guys for listening, for tuning in this week. This is a great show. This is probably one of my favorite shows we've done in a long time. What a topic for Friday. We really knocked it out of the park this week. For myself, for Hunter, for Kaz and Tanner, you guys have a great night. I'm gonna go pick up Lindsay, and then the Horse Time Boys are about to get wild. And I'll see you guys tomorrow for CCW, probably. Anyway, good night, guys. Hunter, take us out.
MacGruber!
Journalism, bias in journalism.
Yeah.
And so continue your pulpit speech.
Oh, see, now I forgot it though. That's the problem.
I know. That's true.
Something,
we're speaking about, go ahead.
I'll say something along the lines of that I believe that journalism at its heart should be unbiased. At its heart, journalism should be unbiased. A reporter's job is to present the facts. And I think that is where journalism belongs. But the problem is journalism as the concept is supposed to be, in my opinion, doesn't exist anymore. And part of that is because of the networks that own journalism at this point. You have the 24-hour news cycle, you have, you know, sponsors, you have people that pay these networks to push their agenda. Look at Fox News. And so, you know, Fox News is the easy one because we've picked on Fox News forever, but you can also look at things like CNN, MSNBC. There's not a single channel that doesn't have a bias against something, you know, whether they lean left, whether they lean right, or whether they're Newsmax and OAN and they're just complete fucking jokes.
I got to point something out.
Go ahead.
You're equating. I just something we talked about before the show started. Be careful to equate bias to political polarization or ideological polarization, because bias is inherently just a taking a side or a, you know, having a favoritism of a particular point of view. That could be applied to a lot of things. And to have implied bias has many implications. But when it comes to journalism, there's never been a time where there wasn't some bias in place.
I don't know. I don't know if I... I think if
you, because if you are anti-war, or if this particular situation seems inhumane, there is an inflection of voice or a word usage in telling such a thing that is going to imply some form of a bias. Yeah. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that yearning or waxing poetic for a different time is tricky whenever we either A, didn't experience it, or B, the aspect of it is out of context.
But I also think that bias, there's a certain type of, Michaela, we'll get to that in 1 second, I promise. There's a certain type of bias that at one point, for better or worse, and a lot of times it was worse, I think journalism, the bias that it portrayed was a bias that we had as a country, or at least as a human, as human beings. You know, you could show World War II, and of course there's a bias for, you know, the Allies, but it was also a kind of universal agreement that what the Nazis were doing was terrible. But I, you know, you also could talk about, it's not just in print journalism or in, you know, news journalism like anchors and video production and stuff like that, but even in photography, you could say that, you know, taking pictures of Vietnam, taking pictures of Iraq, you know, the war against terror, that there's a bias in those pictures because of how ugly the things they're showing is. But that's also, that's just truth. I saw a picture of a, it was from, I believe it was Vietnam, and it was just a burned, or no, it was Iraq. It was Iraq. It was a corpse in a car, and it was just burned. It was burned to a crisp. And you could make the argument that that is a biased picture because you're showing the horrors of war and you have a message about war. But that's also just the truth of it. That is what happens. So I think that it gets very tricky on deciding what's biased and what's not. But what you can't, I think what you would agree with is that the mainstream cable networks, your Foxes, your CNNs, every mainstream cable network has, would you call it a bias? What would you call it?
I would call it polarization that is inherently unique to the times. Just going to your point a while ago about, you know, using photojournalism as an example, coming from somebody who's
you're engaged, a photographer.
I mean,
yeah, I've
did that for a few years and still do. And I've documented everything from political campaigns to demonstrations that were either peaceful or, you know, I've had my fair share of tear gas and tackles by SWAT police and what have you. But you have to be careful when it comes to the manner in which you're talking about your bias. It's easy to imply, okay, that journalism has bias in its particular time frame, its particular ideological seriousness as it is today, more so than in, you know, the 90s. But at the same time, others would argue that there were other issues going on that maybe wasn't directly affecting us, that was affecting another person more so, that, you know, the 90s may have for them been more biased or more, you know, engaged. But to the photography point, you have to also consider the part of the equation where the viewer is also applying a bias to looking at a photo. If there's no context to a photo, this is something that happens in street photography a lot, actually, urban photography, where it's just candid imagery that's taken in the street. A photographer takes this, puts it out there, and there's no caption. There's no, you know, there's not any context around it. It's just the visualization of a moment in the street. And it's now, I have always argued in my time in street photography, is always there is a moment where a photographer releases that into the world where they kind of release like ownership of it. Like the creative ownership to a point is still there, but the understanding of that image and the implications of that image and whatever the person that derives from that image changes. And it's just there. That is an aspect of that formula is what I mean. That is very important because if you're talking about bias, there's also the people too are applying to that a part of that bias,
but
that are watching it.
The bias of the viewer should have no part of what the journalist does. If you take a picture and you post it online and you've taken a picture of a burning building, you've taken a picture of something, you know, relevant, and the individual person puts their own bias onto it, that's on them. That's not the place of the journalist to tell people how to think. You would hope that they would be sensible and they would use common sense and, you know, but they don't. I mean, again, you've seen in the past year, hold on, I got to fix your face, Kaz. You got a horse over you.
I would hope that they would chill Darrell.
This is Darryl.
That's what I would hope.
Oh,
like a white Darryl. Okay.
Don't give it away yet. But yeah, no, to finish the point, and then Cass, I'll give you the floor real quick. Kind of, we're in a deep conversation about journalism here.
Okay.
I just don't think the bias, the bias of the viewer should not influence the journalist, and it shouldn't influence the art, and it shouldn't define it. Again, if you post a picture of something that is just life, here's a picture of a dead child in the street, and you just post the picture as is because you are covering the facts, and the people form their own bias based on what you report. That doesn't make your reporting bias. It just makes the people biased, and then that shouldn't have no, that should play no part in the way you do things. But I agree with you in that journalism itself can never be unbiased again, only because, again, there are no independent journalists.
Sorry, I just want to make clear. I've never perceived it to be unbiased ever.
Right. Yes. Hunter, what do you think? Real quick. Do you think journalism can be unbiased? Has it ever been unbiased? Or do you think it's always had a slant, no matter what it was?
And I want to add to his point that I find a difference between bias and polarization.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, there's an extreme difference between bias and polarization. It's at a certain point you're getting pedantic, and I know we joke about, oh, it's shallow. No, but it really is. Like, yeah, you're never going to, the human condition means that nothing is ever completely unbiased. That it's you know what Adesa say yesterday about there's no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Right.
There's no lack of bias with humanity. Right. Just can't be done. There are levels. There are levels of it, and I think that over time we have extremely swung so far in a lot of outlets, not every outlet, but toward bias that it's just. This is where it reaches again, another term that we haven't overplayed, but has been overplayed. And that's gaslighting to the point of, oh, you're making that up. We're not biased. You're the crazy one. Mm. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any way for everyone and everything, especially in something as big as journalism, to be unbiased. But I think that over time, and it's a product of a lot of different things. Part of it is a very benign thing. We have way more news now than we've ever had before. We've said it a million times. The 24-hour news cycle makes it impossible to find less biased news because you have 800 networks and people and things devoted to news,
right.
Most of which is just regurgitation of what somebody else already said.
So that's just for the record, that is how this all started, because Kaz and I were talking about journalism, and I said, when you've got so many people out there from so many networks covering the same story with a lot of the same biases, how many do you need? How many people do you need out there saying the exact same thing, covering the same story the same way?
The problem is that simultaneously you need all of them.
That's what
and
Kaz
you
said,
really
yeah.
only need one.
It's true.
It's you really only need one, but you need all of them. If you need all of them in the sense that you need an aggregate. This is something that we live?
Yeah.
We live yet?
Yeah, yeah, we've been live.
Of course we are.
This is something I talk to people that I talk to about with primary and secondary sources. In that secondary sources can be really useful because you get enough of them and you get a good aggregate version of the story. It's the difference between precision and accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
You need a good mix of both. You need, not only do you need things to all roughly be the same account, even with a couple of different things here and there, but you also need them to all be on target, on the bullseye. That's a really simplified way of putting it, but I've also, I got to run and get Parker really quick, so
that's
I'll
fine.
Be right back.
That's fine. We'll start the show when you get back.
I want to also put a period on top of the I, or a dot on the I, what Hunter was talking about here is when it comes to levels. It's also worth noting, too, that this is three-dimensional when it comes to that. Like, in our perspective in the current times, there are certain issues or things that are going on right now that seem, like, incredibly unique, or, you know, a big portion is against them and a big portion is for them and so forth. But journalism is approaching it in the way in which they are. But you could also say the same thing about the 50s, 60s when it comes to civil rights. And, you know, one could argue that at that time, your journalism was in the same kind of situation. And then previous to that is when fighting for women's rights and the right to vote. Or I think we very often find ourselves looking at the current times as the most like, oh, this is the most back and forth raging polarization. But that doesn't mean that it always was.
No.
And so I guess my point is like, it's always been this way, and it just has those levels to what Hunter was talking about.
Yeah, but
and we also have to keep in mind which our perspective on it. You and me are going to have a particular perspective on certain class or racial or certain situations differently than others will, and they'll perceive a particular time period as more or less biased or problematic than others.
See, as a journalist, because again, you and I have both done journalism for many, many years. We both were in the same classes. We did the same thing. We were both editor of the same paper.
We both got it shut down.
We both got the paper shut down because we were so insane and anarchists.
And biased.
But I think that, you know, my problem with journalism now is that it's to present facts. Say Donald Trump, take for example. When Donald Trump is making a speech, you present what he said. And you present facts of the situation. You present the facts of what he said, what it contradicts, what's a lie, and all that stuff. And if you just do that, that's fine. That's journalism. It's when you take those onto shows and you have the panelists dissect and twist everything, every fact, all that into whether it's Fox News and they're pro-Trump and it's MSNBC and CNN and they're anti-Trump, whatever. You can't just present facts as are. There's always someone to push their agenda based on those facts. I wish there could just be an independent journalism that just presents facts. And again, it's frustrating to talk about because in my head, my mouth doesn't always match what my head thinks. So I ramble without making the point that I want to make. And it frustrates me to no end. I didn't used to be this bad. I blame the alcohol poisoning lately. But it's frustrating that you can't have journalism without, I don't know, bias. I don't know. I lost my point. Sounds exactly what I'm talking about. I had a point to make and I lost it.
There's an aspect also of adoption of people to watch something or to, and so my point is sometimes entertainment or at least the way in which something is portrayed is going to be more accepted by the mass. You go for numbers or quality. And that's what a lot of networks are going to do. AP and Ruger's, for instance, go for quality. Right. And the result of that is most other they become the de facto where the root of a story is, right, where that anchor point is, and then other places actually get their news from that. Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, they're not investigative journalists. Like there are a couple, three. I don't want to be disrespectful.
They have investigative journalists. Even Fox has legitimate journalists. Yeah.
But that's not their core factor. Their core factor is the equivalent of your monitor for a computer. Like, I don't want to diminish the monitor, but mostly it's showing you the computation that's happening in the background.
Well,
and that's AP and Ruger's and, you know, different journalists that's out in the field, that's in the war zones, that's in these places, that's actually gathering the story. They put it on the wire. These news organizations are subscribed to that wire. They pull the news, and then the spin and bias occur.
See, I always, when I grew up and I wanted to become a journalist, I wanted to become a journalist because I wanted to tell the truth. I wanted to speak power to truth. I wanted to expose corruption. I wanted to present the facts. And I'd like to think that that's what journalism is at its heart. But the more we talk about it, and I start thinking about, you know, in different times when before the 24-hour news cycle and all that stuff, well, it had to be more pure back then, but it really wasn't, because when you had newspapers, you were trying to sell a newspaper. When you had, you know, there was always something to sell. And it's shameful, but...
Mm. Here's the thing, though, and this kind of sums the whole thing up. For I was going to say for better or worse, but I don't... It's all for worse. We, as part of the social contract, journalistic integrity existed, right? That was just a general part of the social contract. We're all going to be, we live in a society, right? We're all going to be civil and reasonable to each other. And there's a certain, you know, level of integrity that has to be upheld in a lot of things. The Hippocratic Oath, you know, doctors first, do no harm. for journalism, it was journalist integrity. We're going to tell the truth to the best of our ability. And over time, because society, especially American Western society, has shifted so dramatically, sooner or later, that thing was on the chopping block. And unfortunately, it's not like it all happened in one fell swoop, but the biggest drop-off happened around 2014, 15, 16. The biggest one we've seen historically, anyway. When it reached a point where people just decided, I don't care what the truth is. I'm going to say what makes me sound good. I'm going to say what makes my people sound good. And those were it was one thing when the people at the bottom were doing that, because effectively those people don't matter in this situation. You can say whatever you want to your friends, your family, whatever, but if you don't have any level of power, it doesn't matter. When it got all the way to the top, and a person at the top was actively lying to make themselves sound better, that was just a huge, and that's what drew the line. That's really what put the difference between the, I'm going to say what my guy is saying, even though I know it's a lie because it makes him sound good, and we're going to tell the truth. There's not enough on this side anymore. And it's a damn shame that there's anybody on this side.
And you know, not only that, but you say 2004, 2015, when Donald Trump coined the phrase, he didn't coin the phrase, but he definitely made it popular, fake news. All it took...
Oh, yeah, he didn't coin it because he took it and spun it.
Right.
Fake news was utilized by the opposite side of things going, no, well, what you're saying is not real. Yeah. And they said, no, you're fake news.
Fake news.
We're rubbering your glue.
Fake news used to be the National Enquirer. Fake news used to be Bat Boy and shit like that. And what they did was they took...
Joke stuff.
Stuff that was... I mean, no one looked at the National... That's not true. People did look at the National Enquirer and think it was real. There are definitely some people that did that. But, you know, most
sane people... On a grand scale, it wasn't happening.
Right. Most people knew it was a joke. The problem is when in current journalism, in a society that we live in now, that they literally present facts. And those facts are disputed by nothing more than opinion and a disagreement. With nothing to back them up. But that is all that they need to convince themselves and to convince others that they no longer need evidence. They no longer need facts. They no longer need science. All they need is to hear what the person they like most to say. And that will trump, no pun intended, anything that makes sense or is accurate.
If I may,
this is why now more than ever, it's important to teach the people who are coming up how to spot these things. How to identify them, how to not participate in them. You can't make them do it, but you can at least give them the building blocks of here's what you need to be looking at objectively. Here's how to look at something objectively. When you look at a piece of news and a piece of information, and it doesn't have to come from the internet or the newspaper or TV. Anytime somebody says something to you that even sets off one little, you know, whistle in the back of your mind, that doesn't sound right. Here's how you can look at that objectively without being offensive, without starting an argument, without looking argumentative, by just saying, I need the facts on this.
Just the facts, man.
It's never been more important to me that these sorts of things are taught and bred into people. It's always been important, but especially now when it's not happening as often. And again, when you have people in positions of power who are actively restricting access to those sorts of things, we don't want you to look into anything objectively. Just listen to us. Donald Trump pitched his own news organization when he was president. There was a point in time where that would have damn near been considered treason.
Yeah.
You can't be the source of the news for the world, or the country at least. Not when you're in charge.
Then you're China.
You should be interpreting those things. But it's...
Kaz, go ahead and then it's horse time.
So, okay, I don't mean to be this fucking guy on this, but like, I see and I completely agree where we are is a problem, where what level this is an absolute problem on so many levels. But I also want to keep some sobering understanding here is that this is not unique to human, is we act like yellow journalism in the early 20th century, Nazi propaganda in the early 20th century, all the way back to Caesar or Genghis Khan. It just depends on when, the manner in which news or storytelling or some form of expressing something to the masses is going to be this way. And with each developing new innovation or what have you, it's just another way that this stuff propagates more and more. And I wouldn't really call it the most opportune, like the most important time in our human history that this is going to be, that we need to change something or something. It's just it feels that way to us because this is the current age's way in which information is distributed. And humans always have an inherent problem with being able to do so without there being a good versus evil or a black versus white kind of scenario. And that's what we're up against right now, is just it's a continuation of the human syndrome. And it's a fundamental problem, is my point.
I think
right, but I'm not discounting like stuff that happened then, obviously, you know, Nazi propaganda, yellow journalism, those sorts of things. I say it's more important now than ever because we're still not learning from those mistakes.
That's always never learning from these mistakes.
We're supposed to learn from those mistakes.
Yeah. Like we're in a time right now where like
time too.
Sorry, I was just gonna point out, like I was talking to somebody last night, like we're in a point right now where it's how we have Moore's law of technology and information and cult adoption, where a Jonestown that was once relegated to a single place has now went nationwide.
Yeah, okay. Can I say something on that real quick?
Which is why I say it's more important now than ever.
And
because we're now,
but I'm just trying not to discount what happens in 20 years.
Globally.
Well, right. No. I'm just saying
in the moment now, we gotta stop. If we can stop it here, then that won't be relevant.
The problem with that, and like, I agree with you, but the sad part and what gets me is that when you talk about Nazi propaganda, when you talk about state-run television and stuff like that, and back in the days before the internet, before we had so much access to news and so much access to facts, back then, if your leader told you something, you would probably believe it simply based on the fact he was your leader, and you didn't have any avenues to find out differences. There weren't so many news networks. There wasn't so many options to do that. But now, we literally live in a society where if someone says something that's false or fake, you can look up the facts. You can research it, and people just don't.
No. Be careful with that statement, because yes, that's true, but you also have like... Humans have this ability to like either rationalize or irrationalize something. So say when somebody says that the Capitol was attacked, were you there? Is that question. And you have this kind of reality thing where it's like colors don't exist unless you actually interpret it in your brain. Like in the real world, it's different.
Well,
my point is, it's just like, it's don't discount the ability for some people to put that to the side because they didn't see it.
But okay.
And that makes... It removes the reality of its actual
when
you're right. But at that point, you're trying to rationalize the irrational, and
I know.
I
completely. I don't disagree. I'm just saying, don't disregard the ability of somebody else to do that.
But take all right. You mentioned January 6th. You mentioned January 6th. Take January 6th for example. There, you know, there's a lot of people that believe that they did nothing wrong on January 6th. There was a Republican senator. I forget who he is, but he said that there was a peaceful. If you didn't
three choices.
If you didn't know any better, you think it was a normal tour. Now, if someone doesn't look up the facts and they don't look up the videos for themselves, they could hear this Republican say that and go, yeah, why is this such a big deal? It was just a tour. But we have the ability to look at the video that shows the riot, that shows the police officers being tortured, that shows sure. all this. So it is there is
and,
no excuse
and
for
you
any.
You equally have the ability to look up that same information and get the complete opposite side, to get that person you were just saying of someone saying, oh, but it wasn't really that big a deal.
Yep. Or you have a third party that creates and says, oh, it's one of those videos where they're doing a fake video or whatever.
A deepfake.
Deepfake is legitimately one of the most dangerous things that's ever been created.
Agreed.
I'm saying it now, and it's not a hot take.
No.
Coming from somebody I've been in the Adobe garden since fucking Layers was introduced in the 90s. Like, I know to what extent that stuff is the potential for that in good and bad rationale. Deepfakes are a troublesome concern.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really. There, you know, there was, I don't know if it was
this year is a perfect example of why.
Well, there was it, I don't remember if it was a deep fake itself or it was just in general, just the media that we have and the ability that we have to alter footage and stuff like that. There was a video of Hillary Clinton that said something and they had altered it to make her look bad. There was a Joe Biden clip that was altered to make him look, I think, like racist. And again, if people don't take it upon themselves to reach and search out the facts, it is very easy to be tricked because you allow yourself to be tricked. And that's just sad because we have the technology to not be tricked and we choose not to use it. We would rather be led like sheep. And I know that's such a generic saying, but it's absolutely true.
Monday through Friday, most of the year, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., I deal with, you have the wealth of the world's technology in your pocket, and you refuse to use it for anything useful.
You're on TikTok.
Humans became the species that the more information we had at our hands, the more... Yeah, it's too overwhelming, so we decided to be stupid instead.
Ooh, all right. Well, with that said,